Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for June 19th, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market. In agricultural news, the House yesterday passed fast-track trade authority. Up next, the Senate will have that and other stories. Also, with key USDA reports just over a week away, Todd Gleason looks at the soybean supply-demand balance sheet. It's all on the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
Let's see how futures settled this Friday afternoon. Hard red winter July wheat settled at 503 and a quarter, up 5. September 513, up 5 and a quarter. Soft July wheat 488 and a half, up a half. September 492 and a half, down 3 quarters. July corn 355 and a quarter, down 4 and 3 quarters. September 358 and 3 quarters, down 4 and 3 quarters. December 368 and 3 quarters, down 4 and a half. Go out to July of 16 at 393 and a half, down 4 and 3 quarters. July soybeans settled the week at 971 and a half, down 6 and a quarter. September 942, down 3 and a half. November 939 and 3 quarters, down 2 and a half. July soybean meal settled at 323.10, down 350. July soybean oil settled at 32.55, up 30 cents. Now some last trades. June live cattle, 152, up 157 and a half. August feeders, 223.70, up 177 and a half. And July lean hogs are at 75.82 and a half, and they're down 220. And those are last trades and settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
When you become a sustaining member of WILL, you feel great about providing ongoing financial support to your local NPR and PBS stations. As a sustainer, you never receive renewal notices in the mail, and you get exclusive perks. Most importantly, you make a real difference for this station and for this community. It's easy to sign up, even if you've never pledged before. Call 1-800-898-1065 or visit willpledge.org. Thank you.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Linner's weather highlights, he says that heavy rain and additional flooding will continue into Saturday from east central and southeastern Missouri into southern Illinois, southern Indiana, and western Kentucky as remnants of Tropical Depression Bill cross the region. Moderate to heavy rain will extend to the east into southern Ohio and eastern Kentucky as well. Outside of heavy rain during the next couple of days, the two-week outlook remains favorable for crop development as regular rounds of showers and thunderstorms maintain favorable soil moisture levels across the Corn Belt. Some drying will occur in the last days of June and early July, but much of the region will still have enough soil moisture for crops to withstand a week or two of hot and dry during the first half of July if such a period were to evolve. Delays to soft wheat harvesting will occur in the lower Midwest during the next week, and rain should fall frequently enough to raise concerns over wet weather diseases and crop quality decline. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
Well, a small hiccup if you're a bull as the week ended slightly down in corn and soybeans, but generally speaking, a pretty solid week for corn and soybeans.
Yeah, for the most part, we, you know, saw the market hold in there. We, you know, kind of had a good turn there on Monday, Tuesday, and found some follow-through buying. Been nice to close at the upper end of the trading range here today, but, you know, bull take it and kind of sit back and see what Sunday evening brings us here, first part of next week. But mainly the funds were fairly good sellers in corn today. You know, there's ideas. They sold up over 5,000-6,000 contracts of corn. They were light buyers of beans off and on throughout the day, bean oil, sold the meal on the spread and so forth. But kind of a steady day here ahead of the weekend and kind of waiting for the next bit of news to fall at us.
Is today's price action any indication in traders' mindset that weather conditions are improving?
Oh, in the short term, you know, overall the forecast is a little drier, warmer. But, you know, if you're in southern Illinois here over the last 24 hours, it got tremendously worse. You know, a lot of guys were kind of dodging these downpours and just got bombarded. You know, a lot of 2-4-inch readings, upwards of 7 to 8 inches in some other areas. So that's not good if it landed on your particular farm. So, but once we get past through today, seems like the moisture is going to start letting it off. The thing is, everybody's kind of wishing it stopped raining, and that might come true come later on down the road here. And we don't want to see, you know, one extreme followed by the other. But weather's going to dominate. Next week, we'll see what the crop conditions report shows. There's going to be some low areas that's, you know, going to show quite a bit of deterioration. So we're subject to see that good to excellent category start backing off, you know, 1% to 3% next week, then maybe another 1% to 3% the following week.
If we do see back-to-back weeks of, say, up to 3%, is that any indication that we have seen some nitrogen leaching?
Well, could be. You know, it's more of a just plain drowned out in some areas. You know, you get standing water on it more in a few days, it's just pretty well toast, for say. But nitrogen's been the popular topic here. You know, there's been a lot of meetings, last minute meetings here, and ideas on trying to get some more nitrogen on make up for areas that's seen some leaching and so forth. That's kind of been the talk, the hidden yield robber, you know, if this persists, you know, through the growing season here. It's very important for these plants to have nutrients to go on, and, you know, that might not be the case this year.
The other piece of narrative on the weather, I would suppose, is how much second crop soybeans do we get in the ground?
That's going to be the challenge here. It's going to be a challenge just to get the wheat out, let alone come in some double crop beans. Informa, they are sort of looking at 5.5 million acres of double crop beans going in this year. So we'll monitor that as we go. You know, if we can just shut the moisture off here, there'll be a good chance of those going in. You know, especially you get the southern growing regions. That's where they got a lot more time to work with. In the northern belt, and being thought of replant beans or beans in general after wheat, if they do have some wheat in, is pretty well gone by the wayside.
Informa actually comes out with their June acreage estimate today ahead of the report that we'll see a week from Tuesday. Put soybeans at 86.760 million, down from 87.185. They didn't really drop it all that much.
Well, you know, 400,000 acres, but we're still basically 3 million acres above a year ago, and 2.1 million above where the USDA is at. So, you know, they're looking at heavier bean acres than what's currently on the supply-demand balance sheet. You know, if they're right, then you don't get another 2 or 3 planted, and then you're back to square one again. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of moving parts, and that's going to keep the market zigging and zagging, per se. And we'll see where we are here at the end of the month with the June numbers.
Is this week's key hook reversal in soybeans a valid point in your mindset?
Well, it's impressive. You know, we just need to make sure we follow through. We've got some moving averages above overhead we need to kind of take out. Momentum indicators, you know, provide maybe a little bit of selling resistance here if we can't take out yesterday's highs. But from a technician point of view, the turn's good. Time counts kind of fit and so forth. It fits the change of season, you know, in through here. So, you know, if we just get everything clicking together here with some renewed export demand, that would help things quite a bit. The old crops, you know, pretty well sold. The problem's new crop demand. We're seeing corn, bean, wheat sales running 40% below last year's pace. And, you know, we're not in the situation where we've harvested a new crop yet and really have to push it out the door, but it's important for bean sales to pick up here dramatically because the export season for our beans to China starts as soon as they come off the combine into January. So we're either going to see these sales slow or these sales really pick up big here as we approach fall.
I wondered if Thursday's number might be a prelude to the idea of a pickup one when we got a little bit over 19 million bushels, which is a pretty good number after what has been a pretty dismal start.
Well, you know, that'd be welcome for the bull. But the thing is, we've just not seen those daily announcements. You know, mm-hmm. We're used to watching the newswire at 8 o'clock and seeing 100,000 tons, 300,000 tons, and this is not happening.
Turn your attention to the corn market and its price action this week.
It's, you know, sort of like the beans went down and made some lows. It's timing and cycle counts, everything kind of in line. Moved below the lows we made there last fall, but, boy, just failed to hold anything. So it's going to be kind of important to sort of carve out sideways movement to in through here and kind of build on a head and shoulders bottom if we can to get the trade excited about jumping on the corn here. They've been selling corn, buying beans on the spread. If you're a speculator wanting to make a little bit of money, I'd look at coming in here and buying corn, selling beans on the spread, working that spread the other way. It seems when you get up to these levels here, it kind of falls apart. And been moving back and forth just between this whole 570, 580 on the upper end and 530, 540 on the lower end. We just take the East corn, November bean spread, just one-on-one relationship.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thanks much, Kurt.
All right, take care.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the Internet at batescom.net.
In agricultural news, the U.S. House yesterday passed Trade Promotion Authority, a key to closing a deal in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Additionally, a companion bill to provide federal aid for workers harmed by imports awaits action in both houses in the coming days. The next test comes in the Senate, where support of a dozen or so pro-trade Democrats will be required to approve the standalone measure to enhance the president's negotiating authority. a combined trade aid bill passed earlier on a vote of 62-37. The Eurozone's 19 leaders will meet in an emergency summit next Monday to seek a breakthrough in Greece's bailout after talks yesterday ended in acrimony, intensifying fears that the country is heading for bankruptcy and an exit from the euro. The decision to call the summit is a clear sign that relations between Greece and its creditors are as strained as at any time during the protracted bailout talks. Greece needs outside financial help if it is to meet debt repayments this summer. Officials acknowledge that Greece's exit from the euro is now being discussed and that contingency plans are being made. Stark differences remain over a set of measures the creditors say are key for Greece's economy to recover, including pension cuts and increases to value-added taxes. Meanwhile, Russia today signaled that it is willing to consider giving financial aid to Greece. At least five members of Congress from Missouri are co-sponsoring legislation that would block states from adopting their own labeling requirements for genetically engineered foods. St. Louis Public Radio's Jim Howard reports.
In addition to the lawmakers, Monsanto and hundreds of other companies and associations want voluntary labeling as a national standard. The bill lets the Food and Drug Administration decide when labeling is necessary to protect consumers. John Reifsteck is an Illinois grain farmer and president of the agricultural cooperative Growmark. He told lawmakers individual state labeling requirements would set back American agriculture.
Make no mistake, that's what a patchwork of biotech labeling laws would represent. An unworkable step backward.
Some supporters of the bill say simply labeling a food as genetically engineered causes unnecessary concerns among consumers. Barring action by Congress or the courts, a Vermont law requiring labeling is set to go into effect in July 2016. In Washington, I'm Jim Howard, St. Louis Public Radio.
A group of California farmers say they face financial ruin under orders to stop pumping river water to irrigate their crops this summer amid the state's relentless drought. An irrigation district in Tracy, California, filed a lawsuit on Thursday asking a judge to suspend the order issued by the State Water Resources Control Board. Last week, the state suspended pumping for more than 100 water users in California, holding some of the strongest water rights. The losses of orchards and vineyards could cost farmers upwards of $800 million. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. With the release of acreage and quarterly grain stock reports at the end of the month, traders will know a lot more about pricing soybeans. Still, as Todd Gleason reports, it is useful to understand how price arrived where it is today.
Last fall, USDA projected there would be about 475 million bushels of soybeans left over by the close of the marketing year. That's this fall. Remember that number, 475. The agency has trimmed that number back over time, and this month the target is 330 million bushels. Usage has been really strong, and it's important to remember, says University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good. But it didn't change the balance sheet very much in this one month. Over time, it has, however, been really supportive to the price of soybeans, keeping them above $9 a bushel on the board. Demand has held the bottom end of the market. Supply in the coming marketing year, on the other hand, is the problem at hand. The June 30th acreage report is supposed to help clarify this matter. The spring rains, especially in Kansas and Missouri, may cause that not to happen, says Good.
The June acreage report will be interesting this year because I think, particularly for those two states and perhaps for more states, because it will, in fact, still reflect some intentions for planting for those acres that were not planted as of survey time. So how will producers report those intentions? Are they still planning to plant all the soybean acres if it dries out, or have they already made decision to abandon and go to prevent plant? So even after we see the June number, I think there's going to continue to be some uncertainty about where acreage will actually come in. And so beginning in August, September, we'll start watching the FSA Prevent Plant acreage report to see if we can tweak the June number.
A tweak of 3 to 5 million acres of Prevent Plant for soybeans, thanks Darrell Good, would be enough to change the balance, shifting the overwhelming supply of soybeans that so far appears to be coming, consequently now pegged at 475 million bushels, just like last year, to something far more supportive of price. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with Cash Grain Analysis is Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Dave.
We're going to be reminded at the end of the month on the quarterly grains stock report, I think, of just how much corn is still in producer hands.
Yes, we think we know locally that there's more corn on hand than what there is weeks in the marketing year left, percentage-wise. So farmers have been very tight holders of corn, waiting for a rally, and even with this wet weather, we thought we might get one this week. But I think on a weekly chart, corn finished just a little bit lower. The beans had a nice week, but corn finished just a little bit lower. So we kind of figure now, if they haven't sold it now, they'll probably wait until after pollination, make sure everything still looks good, and if it does, maybe then they'll let loose of that last little bit of old crop corn.
Well, it's not a little bit. It might be 40% or more nationally.
Yeah, I know. It's more than what they wish they were holding, but you know, as I said, if they've still got it now, they're probably going to wait another 3 weeks and make sure pollination goes okay.
Are end users bought up where they need to be, or are they still going hand-to-mouth?
They're bought up. A lot of the processors and ethanol plants in our area have taken have reduced hours. They've taken so much in that they've reduced hours. Some of them have dropped their basis bids a little bit. Others have closed down for days, or they're just buying for last half July delivery. They've got enough bought for first half July already. So all of those are indications that the supply of old crop corn is adequate, more than adequate.
And I will tell you, going forward, it is a concern that through the beginning of the marketing year, we have not seen sales for export of new crop corn and beans at the rate that we saw last year.
Right. I think the end users, the foreign countries, remember, you know, their memory, remember, you know, is no different than farmers. You know, what worked last year, and last year, an abundant crop, it paid to wait, and, you know, you could get a little bit cheaper as you waited. So I think that's what they're doing so far this year, and assuming we have a good crop, that may be the right strategy, but we've got a long ways to go. We're, you know, I call it a hurdle race, and we've stumbled a little bit here in the last 2 weeks with this heavy rain. But we could, in a lot of areas, we still have the potential for a very good crop.
Do you think the top is off the crop, the USDA's top?
Yes, yes. I don't think there's any way we can hit the USDA's number. I think there's too much variability. There's going to be some areas that have record crops, but then there's going to be other areas that are down 50 bushels to the acre. So when you average it all in, I don't think we can have another record crop. So I think we'll be looking at something less than what USDA is projecting in both corn and soybeans. But by the same token, with the kind of carryout we've got in old crop corn, we don't have to have a record crop. If we have the second biggest crop or the third biggest crop of corn, that's probably going to be enough corn. So I don't want to get wildly bullish, but I do think the USDA's numbers are too high.
Thank you much, Greg.
Thanks, Dave.
Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. It's National Martini Day. The origin of the martini is uncertain, but its forerunner is often considered the Martinez, a cocktail with sweet vermouth and Old Tom gin. Of course, there are modifications. Winston Churchill once said that the perfect martini involved pouring a glass full of cold gin and looking at the bottle of vermouth. On this day in agricultural history in 1941, General Mills introduced Cheerios. Each piece of the oat-shaped cereal is 1/2 inch in diameter and was manufactured from the barrel of a puffing gun at high temperature. The name was changed to Cheerios in 1945 to avoid a conflict with a competitor who suggested they had exclusive rights to use the word oats in a commercial name. And in 1977, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline began carrying oil from the Arctic Ocean to Prince William Sound. The cost of the single 48-inch in diameter pipeline was $8 billion. Since its opening, it has sent more than 15 billion barrels of oil to the lower 48 states. By the way, the steel pipe is resistant to gunshots, but in 2001, a drunken gunman shot a hole into a weld, causing a 6,000-barrel oil spill. And that's this day in agricultural history. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner.
Weather conditions across the Midwest this weekend will likely turn rather wet in many areas from Iowa and parts of Missouri straight over into Ohio and parts of Kentucky. We'll likely see this rain resulting in some expanding flood conditions that have already begun to occur across parts of Missouri, as well as back to the west into portions of Oklahoma and Arkansas from the recent heavy rain left over from Tropical Storm Bill. But Bill's moisture is dissipating somewhat, but it is being re-enhanced by cooler air, or I should say it will be re-enhanced by cooler air coming into the region. And so Bill's moisture will come across and produce some 1 to 2 and local 3-inch amounts of moisture, but right behind that will be some additional rainfall that will occur as cooler air tries to mix in with all the tropical moisture left over in the atmosphere, and the result will likely be more rain and thunderstorm activity in the areas I've described. As a result of all the precipitation, there's going to be a rising concern over the condition of soft wheat in the lower Midwest, just like in hard red winter wheat country, where a general decline in quality is taking place because of too much moisture. Now, in hard red winter wheat country, there's not going to be that much precipitation over the next 7 days, and they will actually see some improving tendencies. But that will not be the case in the heart of the Midwest. Those areas will continue to see rain, obviously, at least through the weekend into early next week, and that will continue to pressure the quality of some of that soft wheat. From a corn and soybean perspective, crops in low-lying areas will still get too much moisture out of this next several day period, and some of those areas will likely experience some declining condition of their own. But we should snap out of this rather quickly with the drier weather that's advertised in the final days of June and into early July, and as long as that drier biased environment evolves, we'll likely see improving conditions. Now, before you get too far ahead of me, I am implying less precipitation, but it's not going to be absolutely dry across the Midwest in that second week of the outlook. And because of that, there's still going to be some concern, but I think the intensity of rain will be so much less than what we're going to be seeing over this next 4 or 5 days that we will obviously get into some improved crop conditions. The flood water that's going to be resulting from all of this heavy rain here this weekend into early next week will take a several-day period to work its way downstream, and drier conditions will have to occur for a prolonged period of time in order to get soil conditions back in ideal shape. We are expecting a northwesterly flow pattern aloft to evolve as we get out into the latter part of this month and into early July. That northwesterly flow pattern is likely to bring cooler air into the region, and because of that, we'll likely see the evaporation rates ease up a little bit as well. Temperatures are expected to be mostly in the 70s and 80s as we move forward through this next several day period, but come next week, we'll probably see 80s and 90s occurring into the southern half of the Midwest for a few days as a little ridge building occurs in the southern plains and shifts to the east as we move forward through the work week. Temperatures in the northern Midwest will not warm nearly as much as those in the south, but we'll certainly see a bout of warm weather. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
And that is today's closing market report. This is Dave Dickey.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.